Which text number is it? 26? Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 1. Questions by Vidura. Text 26. Kachchit Purana Purushal Svanabhya. Padmanuvrityeha Kalavatirnao. Asata Urvya Kushalang Vidaya. Kritak Shanao. Kushalam Shurage. Kachchit. Weather. Purana. The original. Purusha. Personalities of Godhead. Krishna and Balaram. Svanabhya. Brahma. Padma Anuvritya. By the request of the one who was born from the lotus. Iha, here, Kila, certainly, Avatirna, incarnated, Asate, are, Urvya, in the world, Kushalam, well-being, Vidhaya, for doing so, Kritakshanao, the elevators of everyone's prosperity. Kushalam, all well. Shuragehe, in the house of Shurasena. Translation. Please tell me whether the original personalities of Godhead, who incarnated themselves at the request of Brahma, who was born out of the lotus flower, and who have increased the prosperity of the world by elevating everyone, are doing well in the house of Shurasena. Purport. Lord Krishna and Balaram are not two different personalities of Godhead. God is one without a second, but he expands himself in many forms without their being separate from one another. They are all planetary expansions. The immediate expansion of Lord Krishna is Baladev, and Brahma, born from the lotus flower from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, is an expansion of Baladev. This indicates that Krishna and Baladev are not subjected to the regulations of the universe. On the contrary, the whole universe is under their subjugation. They appeared at the request of Brahma to liberate the burden of the world. And they relieved the world by many superhuman activities so that everyone became happy and prosperous. Without the grace of the Lord, no one can become happy and prosperous. Because the happiness of the family of the Lord's devotees depends on the happiness of the Lord, Vidura first of all inquired about the well-being of the Lord. Om Ganatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. What is the situation here? I hope you all are up to speed with what is going on. because it is a very intense part of Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is intense. Srimad Bhagavatam is the concentrated bliss of hearing and chanting about Krishna. And as we often explain, Sanatana Goswami states that every syllable of Srimad Bhagavatam is flooded with Krishna prema. You'll find that statement in the Krishna Lila Stava. Bearing this in mind, we approach Srimad Bhagavatam and we hear. We approach submissively. The other day we were speaking about how in order to understand Krishna's pastimes, we need to humbly accept that we don't really know what love is. Someone who is actually materially exhausted is not simply someone who is penniless, poverty-stricken. To be materially exhausted means you are aware that you don't know what love is and you don't know what pleasure is. Furthermore, you don't know what success is. When you have accepted those three things, that you don't know what love is, you don't know what pleasure is, and you don't know what success is, then indeed you are materially exhausted and you can easily approach Krishna. Whom, as Kunti Devi says, tum akinchana gotra, he's easily approached. She addressed Krishna directly. You're easily approached by those who are materially exhausted, whereas those who are puffed up by material opulences, they cannot approach you with feeling. So the material opulences, janma, good birth, aishvarya, wealth, shruta, learning, shri, personal beauty, these opulences magnify your sense of knowing what you're doing and feeling competent. And that confidence comes out in your belief or your assumption that you know what is love, you know what is pleasure, and you know what success is. So we can examine ourselves to see how much we have bought in to materialistic conceptions. Consciously or subconsciously. And therefore there are impediments in our approaching Krishna. And Bhagavatam is the literary presence of Krishna, especially meant for Kali Yuga. Remember the question asked in the first canto by the sages at Naimisharanya. They asked Sutta Goswami, what are we going to do? Krishna has departed for his own abode. How will the world understand what is Dharma? And the answer they received was, Srimad Bhagavatam has arisen, brilliant as the sun. It will dispel all the darkness. Again, in order to approach Krishna, and that means in order to approach the Bhagavatam, indeed, to maximally approach the Hare Krishna mantra, we need to abandon our false confidence that we know what is love, we know what is pleasure, and we know what is success. If you can toss those notions out of your life, you save yourself so much trouble. It is the nature of the conditioned soul to clutch on to things. And I know. There's some things I know. I may not know everything, but I have experience. To truly be materially exhausted means that you're willing to jettison your conceptions. And that way you can quickly become purified. Instead of holding on to material conceptions, we want to hold on to Krishna's lotus feet. And holding on to Krishna's lotus feet means holding on to devotional service in the association of devotees, hearing and chanting about Krishna is the foundation of all devotional service. Vidura and Uddhava, their paths have just crossed. The situation is very dramatic and very overwhelming. Both of them know what's going on, that the Yadu dynasty has departed, Krishna has departed. Both of them are aware of that. Yet, you see, Bhagavatam is full of spiritual culture. So, in such a situation of calamity, the disappearance of the Yadu dynasty and, of course, the disappearance of Lord Krishna, in that kind of situation, you don't immediately just cut to the chase as one would do in the cultures we are familiar with today. You gracefully and gradually approach the very troublesome matter at hand. So, Vidura actually knew that the Yadu dynasty and Krishna had departed. But the shock is so great for him that even though he knows, he doesn't know. In other words, he hasn't processed it yet, we would say. He knows, but he hasn't fully assimilated it. Therefore, he's asking Uddhava about all the Yadus. You'll see so many verses coming up in which Vidura asks about this Yadu, that Yadu. Although Vidura knows, they're gone. But basically, in other words, he's asking for support and help. Let's try to process this great calamity together. That's basically what he's saying to Uddhava. So even though he's asking questions about all the members of the Yadu dynasty, he knows they're gone. But it's the nature of responding to tragedy that you seek ways how to process the situation gradually. And so Bhagavatam is full of grace, Bhagavatam is full of poise, it's full of finesse. And that's what you're seeing here. You're seeing spiritual culture, real culture. You're seeing the utmost finesse in relations. You might say the first inquiry that Vidura makes is about Krishna and Balaram. He asks, are they doing well? Kritakshano kushalam shura gehe. They're the elevators of everyone's prosperity. Are they doing well in the house of Shurasena? Are they doing well in that dynasty? How can you ask about the welfare of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? If Vidura is actually one who knows the absolute truth, and certainly Uddhava is, knowing the Supreme Absolute Truth, then why would Vidura ask about the welfare of the Supreme Absolute Truth? He's doing it out of prema. Krishna is self-sufficient. He needs no one to look after his welfare. Yet, out of love, the devotees ask about Krishna's welfare. We spoke a few days ago about how love is the topmost dynamic in the topmost portion of the spiritual world. Not our material conceptions of what is right and what is wrong. We briefly discussed how when Krishna gazes upon. The beautiful young ladies of Vrindavan. Sometimes he becomes so overwhelmed that he starts milking a bull instead of a cow. And his dearmost consort, Srimati Radharani, she sometimes becomes bewildered, blinded by love, and embraces a tamal tree because the color of the tamal tree resembles Krishna. Is this a mistake? No, the topmost principle of Goloka Vrindavan is pure love. We discussed, remember, about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seeing a sand dune as he walked on the beach at Jagannath Puri, but he mistook it for a Govardhan Hill and started running toward it. Is that a mistake? No, that is the way of pure love, that you see the beloved everywhere. Similarly, out of pure love, Vidura is asking about the well-being of Krishna and Balaram, even though they don't need anyone to ask about their well-being. We read in the purport, without the grace of the Lord, no one can become happy and prosperous. Because the happiness of the family of the Lord's devotees depends on the happiness of the Lord, Vidura first of all inquired about the well-being of the Lord. So besides Vidura's being affected by prema, and therefore he's asking about the well-being of the Supreme Self-Sufficient One, Vidura is acknowledging that we can only be indirect enjoyers. Now, this is a tough pill to swallow. You can just feel your conditioning rising up in you. You are the direct enjoyer. You can feel that. For so many births, this conditioning has been with us. Yet it is the source of all our problems. This contamination, this fever that burns in us to directly be the enjoyer. It's something that can only be purified at the root by immersion in selfless devotional service based on hearing and chanting about Krishna. In that way, the disease will be destroyed at the root. Otherwise, not possible. And you can just feel the enormous habits built up over the years, over the lifetimes. That happiness means I directly enjoy. With my mind and my senses, I interact with what's around me. And if that interaction is favorable for my gratification, that means I'm enjoying. So conditioned life means to be affected by this illusion that I just reach out. Enjoyment is there directly. It's a total mirage. Common example given is like the hand lustily looking at a glubjaman and thinking, the hand is the enjoyer. And the hand grabs the glubjaman and squeezes it to enjoy it. Can the hand enjoy the glubjaman in that way? I got it. The hand thinks it's my glubjaman. Feel that juice. It's an illusion. In order for the hand to relish the glubjaman, what does it have to do? It has to bring the glubjaman to the mouth. And then, when the glubjaman goes into the stomach and is assimilated, the whole body feels nourished. In that way, the hand is the indirect enjoyer of the glubjaman. So what is your hand going to do? Go on strike? I cannot directly enjoy the glubjimin, forget it, I'm not bringing it to the mouth. Now, it is the constitutional position of the hand to assist the whole body by bringing the food to the mouth, which is the authorized place for food to be processed. Similarly, we cannot be direct enjoyers. And the whole bhakti process is meant to work on our contamination. That enjoyment is there. I just reach out with my mind and senses. This is the depth of ignorance. And this is what's troubling us. So if we're going to cleanse that contamination, we really need an aggressive program to recuperate our health, to regain our health. You can't take it casually. Yeah, so I think I'm the direct enjoyer. It happens, you know. After all, everyone's like that. What do you want out of me? No, you have to be proactive, recognizing the disease and working on it. And then we can enter more deeply into this statement that because the happiness of the family of the Lord's devotees depends on the happiness of the Lord, Vidura first of all inquired about the well-being of the Lord. Just think, you're dependent on someone else's happiness. You don't like that. Materialistic society trains you to think you are the independent enjoyer. Your happiness depends on you. Shape your life. Be all that you can be. Adjust, arrange, manage, organize for you. And if situations and persons don't fit your program for happiness, you know what to do. Get rid of them. Throw them out. This is our conditioning, which is so deep in this age of Kali. Even India now is being overloaded with this kind of mentality. To realize that we are dependent on someone else's happiness. We are dependent on Krishna being pleased. And to please Krishna, as we spoke the other day, that pleasing Krishna depends on pleasing Krishna's devotee. In this section of Bhagavatam, you're going to read about the interactions between these two greatest devotees, Vidura and Uddhava. After Vidura concludes his long list of inquiries about particular members of the Yadu dynasty, he's going to ask, again, O friend, O my friend, please therefore chant the glories of the Lord, who is meant to be glorified in the places of pilgrimage. So Vidura's made his presentation, beginning with asking about the welfare of Krishna and Balaram, and then asking about so many members of the Yadu dynasty, and then he concludes his presentation by saying, now, my dear friend, please chant Krishna's glories. And what happens? Uddhava is silent. He's frozen. Because by hearing Vidura's questions about Krishna, Uddhava suddenly remembers intensely, more intensely than usual, his feelings of separation from Krishna. So he freezes, he's silent. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Uddhava is silent for 48 minutes. He knows. And during that time, Uddhava is actually not present in the material world. Because just by hearing inquiries about Krishna, Uddhava's consciousness is in the topmost planet of the spiritual world. And particularly, he's in Dwarka, on Krishna Loka. Just by hearing the questions about Krishna. How is that possible? What is the technological mechanism by which this is happening? The mechanism is that remembrance of Krishna is the same as the presence of Krishna. This is what Uddhava is demonstrating. This is how powerful bhakti is. By hearing the questions from Vidura, Uddhava remembered Krishna more intensely. It's not that he ever forgot Krishna, but it's just that the subject matter of Krishna is newer and newer at every moment. So the questions of Vidura provoked a further expansion of Uddhava's Krishna consciousness. So much so that Uddhava lost consciousness of his presence on the earthly realm and was absorbed in being in Dwarka, in Krishna Loka. These are the mysteries of Bhagavatam. This is the power of the bhakti spiritual technology, which is unsurpassed. It's not about religious belief. Uddhava is actually transported by way of the mechanism of remembering Krishna. And then, after a period of time, Uddhava is once again present in this realm, and he delivers his dramatic opening words. Krishna Dumani Nimloche. What does that mean? The sun, S-U-N, the sun of the world has set. And our house, meaning the Yadu dynasty, has been swallowed by time. Very most beautiful artistic way of saying Krishna is gone. And the Yadu dynasty is gone. Krishna Jumani Nimloche. The sun of the world. That orb that illuminates everything has set. In other words, we are all now plunged in darkness. And the unsurpassable Yadu dynasty has been swallowed by the snake of time. What more can I say? The more we read this section of the Bhagavatam, the more we're able to feel those dynamics. It's super intense. And notice Uddhava's maximally cultured reply, even in relaying the conclusion, which Vidura already knew, but still, even in relaying that conclusion, Uddhava speaking with maximum artistry. The sun of the world has set. What more can be said? We are now plunged in darkness. Another point in the verse today is Krita Shino, the elevators of everyone's prosperity. How is it that our prosperity depends on Krishna and Balaram? Our prosperity, according to the materialistic mindset, depends on our own endeavors. Prosperity depends on which political party you put in office. Just like now, the new Prime Minister of India is promising prosperity. I'll take away all the barriers to business, just like I did in Gujarat. Prosperity will happen all over India. And people are so foolish. They think that prosperity depends on politicians or economists. And then when they hear Srimad Bhagavatam, that the elevators of everyone's prosperity are Krishna and Balaram, please be practical. We believe in God. We worship the gods. We put a little something in the hundi. But how is it that prosperity depends on Krishna and Balaram as a practical reality? How can that be? The great illusion that human society operates under is that prosperity and happiness can be achieved by skillful manipulation of matter. If you know the right process for manipulating matter, you can generate prosperity and happiness. They think this so much that even in their dealings with nature, they treat nature like it's inanimate, mechanical matter. In this way, believing human beings are their own key to prosperity, they plunge the world into more and more chaos, economically, politically, environmentally. But because some parts of the world temporarily seem to be a little bit enjoying, you forget about the suffering that's in most of the world. The sufferings that people take for granted in most parts of the world, we'd be horrified by if they happened here. It's like I've been communicating with devotees in Ukraine, because the part of Ukraine where all that trouble is now, I would regularly travel in. So, civilians are being killed in this civil war. Women, children. You see video clips of apartment buildings devastated by military warfare. And then, of course, one Malaysian Airlines passenger plane was flying high in the air, far above the conflict. But evidently the rebels shot it down, thinking it was the Ukrainian government seeking to attack them. 300 people dead. 300 people on their way from Amsterdam to Kuala Lumpur, never thinking anything like that would happen. So devotees were writing me, amidst all this going on, that they were describing their situation as, we're having a little problems, and we're having a few problems in our area, a little bit of political instability. They always use that term, political instability. So therefore, Maharaj, we realize you can't come due to this few problems we're having here and the political instability. I said, my God. They are so accustomed to living in what we call bad karma alley, in between Russia and Germany. And they're so used to being kicked around and obliterated that even when, you know, all this chaos and all these hostilities are going on, all this combat, there's a little bit of political instability in our area. So it just shows you there's different standards of heaven and hell. So because such things are not happening At this time in Australia, we think, oh, life is good. You look at a place like Singapore. Prosperous. But how many of you would have wanted to live in Singapore less than 100 years ago, 70 years ago? The place was totally hellish. It's at the epicenter of World War II in the Pacific. But fortunes change, and then everyone thinks, oh, now everything is nice. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us a perspective on the age of Kali that is so important. Otherwise, we're so quick to lose our vision in the dense darkness of Kali Yuga. We must have this light. And by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing the reactions of Krishna's devotees to whatever Krishna does, we develop affinity, we develop attraction for our natural position as secondary or indirect enjoyers. The position becomes attractive to us once again. Let Krishna enjoy first, and we take the remnants. Krishna's enjoyment is the only priority. That's the Vrindavan principle. They don't know anything else in Vrindavan except Krishna's enjoyment. All right, any questions? Yes.
I'm desperate to have this material world. These people in mindfulness and Krishna consciousness, even though I'd like to get my household life and take sannyas, even with my wealth and everything else, I just can't do it.
The amazing thing for all of us, is that what we all don't give up will give us up. That's the fact. I was talking to one Prabhupada disciple, and he must be about 68 now, and just about to retire from his engineering job. All his kids, four kids, are all married. He's got grandchildren. And so he's talking about, I got to get back into it, got to get back into the devotional service. So I said, yeah, why not? You can live near the Los Angeles Temple, and he used to do service for the BBT, accounting service. You can do that again. Said, yeah, I can get back into that. I don't need the money. I can just serve for free. But then he and his wife were talking, but we're so accustomed to living in our huge 5-bedroom house surrounded by 4 acres. What are we going to do? I said, what are you going to do? It's quite simple. Either you give it up or it gives you up. How? They're saying, how can we give up our 5-bedroom house, bedrooms to spare for when the grandchildren visit us? Surrounded by 4 acres, we can look out the window and just see grass and trees. How can we give it up to live in a small apartment in Los Angeles? So I said, not only will it give you up, but also, as you're aging, as the body's deteriorating, it doesn't matter whether you're in a big house or a small house. When the body's breaking down, it's breaking down. So I could see, I remember as a young devotee in the 70s, reading Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, Srila Prabhupada writes that certainly taking sannyas is a painstaking affair. And I was always wondering, what does that mean? Because back then, you know, everyone was taking sannyas when they were in their 20s and 30s. So. What does he mean by it's a painstaking affair? Of course, later I can understand that it's natural when you're older to want more and more comforts. You're more and more attached to the creature comforts. So therefore, the Vedic system goes against that. It pulls you out of that. And it can be very painful to, when you're in your 60s, to just abandon all your creature comforts, abandon the so-called security, and just venture out. So now I understand. I remember in one Vyasa Puja offering, His Holiness Shivaram Maharaj wrote, about how he met an elderly man in the UK. It was like in his mid-70s. And he was a non-devotee. But the man told him, the man knew something about Prabhupada. And the man told him, at that time, I guess Shivaram Maharaj was in his 50s, the man told him, "You don't understand. You will never understand what your Prabhupada did. You don't know what it's like to be in your 70s and then try to do something with no support, with no security. You don't know." But as time continues with its program, more and more we start to understand. What the Bhagavatam tells us is that the most painful thing is to stay put while time ravages you. That's what Vidura told Dhritarashtra, remember? That's the most painful thing. So if we read that section where Vidura is telling Dhritarashtra, you've got to get a move on it. Because remember, how was Dhritarashtra living? He and Gandhari, they were living comfortably, supported by Yudhisthira and company, whom he had actually tried to kill indirectly before the battle of Kukshetra. But Yudhisthira, who has no enemy, Ajatashatru, he's taking care of Dhritarashtra and Gandhari so nicely. So Vidura is kind of puncturing the bubble. Hey, look at your situation. You're being maintained by the one you tried to kill, and time is gobbling you up. Do something now. I remember another time on a morning walk, a devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, "Srila Prabhupada, the Vedas say, pancha sordvam vanam vrajet. When you're 50, you should retire." That's the classic Vedic system, assuming that, you know, you've 25 years of household life. The man was married when he was 25, now he's 50, he's got sons who are in their 20s. The classic Vedic system. And, of course, we don't live in the classic Vedic age. So that's the classic Vedic injunction. When you're 50, you retire from family life. So the devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, "Does that mean then that when you're 50, all your family intricacies and complexities and obligations fade away?" The Prabhupada replied, "Doesn't mean that. Those things will never fade away. It just means when you're 50, that's it." Interesting reply. It'll never fade away. It'll just go on and on and on. But the Vedas say, when you're 50, you call it quits. That's classic Vedic culture. course, as I said, we don't live in classic Vedic circumstances. Husbands are naturally worried. What will happen to my wife? She's faithfully assisted me for 30 years. If I walk out, who takes care of her? Is there an ashram at the temple for, you know, 60-year-old ladies? So these are practical considerations. At least, though, we should understand the principle and strive somehow or other to apply it according to our circumstances, with intelligence, discretion, but with a desire to move ahead. So I was telling this godbrother in California, who's 68, I said, look, you're retiring. You've got your retirement package. You sell your house. You can live so nicely right across the street from the temple. Okay, so it's a small apartment, but when you're asleep, you're asleep. When you're sleeping, you don't think, I'm in a big house sleeping. Okay, when you look out the window, you're not going to see grass and trees. You're going to be in the city. But who is right across the street? Their Lordship, Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish. What compares to that? And I explained to him, in this way you'll easily be able to pick up your sadhana, which you've let slip for about 30 years. Yeah, I said, yeah, I should do that. Yeah. But I don't know. To give up that big house. Rooms for the grandchildren when they come. It's tough. I can appreciate it. It's tough. Yeah, you can appreciate it, right? It's tough. When we were younger devotees, we would probably laughed at such a, oh, you're just attached. But now we can understand. That's why it's so important for intelligent young men, when I say intelligent, I mean forward-thinking young men, to have brahmachari training, because in the future, they'll be able to fall back on that after they've been after they go through household life. They'll be able to remember. There was a time in my life when I didn't have these complications. I did it before. I can do it again. That's why the Vedic system is so brilliant. So an intelligent young man thinks, let me get some years of a brahmachari life under my belt, so to speak. So in that way, I can, in the future, no matter what ashram I'm in, I can always remember how I did live very simply. Because after all, you come into this world with nothing, you leave with nothing. So it is a tragedy that we don't have facilities. We're not able to facilitate grihasthas who have actually stayed together all their life. That is a great accomplishment. We can't facilitate yet their retirement. Because naturally, as I said, the husband is thinking, I've been married to this woman for 30 years, and now I'm supposed to just walk out the door. What happens to her? Often there's not an oldest son to take care of her, like the classic Vedic system. If there is an oldest son, he hasn't yet, you know, come in for a landing in terms of his bhakti. And so the man is rightfully concerned. How do I apply this? And then, of course, if one has multiple marriages, it gets even more complicated. Whenever I'm speaking, like with Badahari Prabhu, I've known his wife and him since they were married, and since she was 16. And So he always tells me when someone says to him, "It's amazing, you two have been together for, you've been married for 30 years. It's amazing, you've been married." He says, "Yes, and to the same wife." So there are all these considerations which we have to take into account, and we don't just fanatically just, you know, apply these Vedic injunctions in an insensitive way. Nevertheless, the basic thrust has to be accepted. We make our move, or time moves on us. That was Vidura's point to Dhritarashtra. Anything else? Yes.
Would you like to put that for 8 minutes? You were there in Krishna Chakravarti telling
Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is always giving these details. He has the vision. I am just repeating. Okay? How can a living entity, what's that? Oh, that can only be done on the spiritual platform, because materially, there's no equality. There's no physical equality. There's no intellectual equality. There's no so-called equality before the law. That's what they say in democratic countries. Everyone's equal before the law. Right, simply depends on how much money you have to pay a lawyer. The one with the best lawyer wins. So equality can only be on the spiritual platform. That means we're all equal as servants of Krishna. In our constitutional position, we are all equal. In our original constitutional position, everyone is Krishna's servant. Ekale Iswar Krishna Arsava Britja. There's only one controller, Krishna. Everyone else is his servant. And no matter what rasa you have with Krishna, there is the dasya prem element there. Even in madhurya ras, vatsalya ras, sakya ras, still there's an element of servitorship. That's what Krishna's cover, as Goswami explains, in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yes. Asking me? What should I say? On the one hand, it is true. Why enter into a situation which you're only going to have to give up? On the other hand, though, you see, living entities have their propensities. They have these bodies which they have been inhabiting lifetime after lifetime. And those bodies have inclinations. How to deal with those inclinations in a constructive way so that purification can come about. So haven't you observed, for example, that at least 99% of all ladies want to marry? And what's that? Well, and I would say at least 90% of men want to marry. So there's no point in arguing why. So how to facilitate all that so that spiritual advancement can go on. In this way, the Vedic system is practical. It's recognizing that there are inclinations, how to deal with that so people can be Krishna conscious and make progress. The whole point is to make progress, whatever ashram you're in. All the ashrams are meant for spiritual advancement, whether they live that way or not. But, as I often explain, especially if I'm speaking to a room full of brahmacharis, which I'm not, but as I often explain, all the ashrams are meant for spiritual advancement. It's just that some ashrams are cheaper than others. Because generally, ladies want things, right? Right? They're not just going to, you know, just stay put and just not want anything. And generally they look to the man as a mechanism for providing. Even if the lady has money herself, she's looking to the man as someone who can fight the world on her behalf and arrange the world and make it a nice place. That's just the way natures are. Generally, ladies expect the man to sort the world out for the lady. Make everything nice, make it a pleasant place, which is an impossible job, to make this world a pleasant place. Make the world emotionally warm and fulfilling. Make it so there are no obstacles. And generally, nice house, nice children. And everything should happen nice with the children, too. That's a lot of work. And it takes money. So how can this all go on in such a way that devotees can make spiritual advancement? Therefore, Srila Prabhupada made a classic statement, a paradox. He's highlighting a paradox. He said, every woman should marry and every man should remain brahmachari. So what does that mean? Something's got to give. And it does. The ideal is that every woman should have a nice partner and every man should be unencumbered and free. But in reality, it's just not going to be that way. So how to arrange to accommodate the psycho-physical inclinations of both genders so that they can make spiritual progress? Because you have to be progressive in your spiritual life. So many times we see that devotees, when they first begin bhakti, they're convinced, I'll go it alone. Even ladies will say, no, I'm not marrying. I've had my share of that. Forget it. But as years go by, their vision changes a bit. So how to work with all that so they can still make spiritual advancement? So therefore, we have four ashrams. Okay?